Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Want to grow your business fast? With TikTok ads, anything is possible. If you've ever thought about advertising your business on TikTok, now is the time to do it. You can drive more customers to your website, sell products right in the app, and you can even use TikTok's creative tools to easily make content and find creators to help sell your products for you. Find new customers today. Just open your browser, type in getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads, and grow your business fast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You know how you always want to know about everyone else's money? Well, then listen to What We Spend, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thanks, everybody.
The Bear.
You're listening to the best of the Bears.
He's in for the touchdown, and the Chicago Bears have taken the lead.
A weekly mix of 670 The Score's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
This hour is brought to you by Jewel Osco.
Dalton sacked. Tyler Gordon, his first of the season.
On second down, it's Hasty again. And caught from behind. There's Kyler Gordon. Boy, did they miss him out the last two games with a hamstring, and they're thrilled to get Gordon back into that secondary.
Here's one thrown. What an effort by Kyler Gordon.
Tyler Gordon blew it up from the secondary.
I love this Kyler Gordon.
The Score Midday Show, 10 to 2 on 670 The Score.
We're just going down the list at this point. Ryan Poles has a to-do list. He has things he wants to get done. He has told us about things that he wants to and needs to get done. And you can cross Kyler Gordon off the list of to-do, if you will. Going back to the first player that was drafted by Ryan Poles back in 2022, he's now got a three-year, $40 million extension with $31.25 million of that guaranteed. And that's how we will begin this third hour on Score Middays. Mark Grody, Marshall Harris, Layla Rahimi has the day off. And Mark, the initial reaction for me on this was, oh, as expected, he got paid. Now, maybe I wasn't expecting him to get the largest contract ever for a slot cornerback, but it tracks if you look at the simple trajectory of the salary cap and where it's headed. It's not going to stay the biggest contract for a slot cornerback for more than a year, I would imagine.
He probably not. I mean, you're right. That's just the way it works. I'm not saying that I thought that he would become the highest paid slot corner in the league necessarily, but there was a path here because we all saw the way he has been playing for the last couple of years and is an excellent cornerback, a good physical player, not just good in coverage, but good at tackling, a just very present player. But guess what? The rest of the National Football League was catching on to it as well. And sometimes that's your best friend when you start to get a reputation. I remember Troy Aikman saying in one of the primetime games, saying what you and I are saying, that he's one of the best slot cornerbacks in the league. That kind of stuff carries more weight than people even know. Because as a player starts to get that attention, that reputation, everybody starts to look at that player. And then the Bears say, oh, look at what we have here. And as you said, that's the first pick by Ryan Poles when he came here. So it's a development success story too, and you have to take those seriously, and you have to keep those in your building. So, yeah, I mean, I think that this is just a big win for the Bears, and that Kyler Gordon go right back in here, and now he can calm down and relax and not worry about anything for a while.
Yeah, it's good for Kyler Gordon to get paid, to see the labor that he's put in pay off in a contract that makes him at $13.3 million per season, the highest AAV at that slot cornerback position. Let's go back to Ryan Poles. Back on April 1st, not April Fool's, April 1st, because we're going to separate those two things, because he was being dead serious on his desire to extend Kyler Gordon.
Yeah, no, that'll still be a priority. You know, for me, on our exit meetings at the end of last season, you know, I told a lot of the guys in terms of future, if it was contracts or coming back, anything like that, you know, the important thing is I got to get with our current and new, you know, the new coaching staff and kind of see how the different players fit based on what scheme we're going to be running. So we've been able to have those conversations. And I know Kyler is a guy that, you know, we want a part of this moving forward. So, you know, the time of that, I'm not sure how that all is going to work out, but that is a priority.
When I saw that he was getting the highest annual average value at that 13.3, it had me thinking, okay, he's being told by the money that he's one of, if not the best, at that position. But then I started thinking about the Bears defense, and I realized, oh, he's also a top five player on the Bears defense, and I don't think he's five.
Can you want to do the drill? Should we rank? Should we do this right?
Let's do it right now.
Man?
Like, as far as defense on the Bears, yeah. who's their best player?
Let's do this. Is it okay? Overall, let's even say, like, Montez Sweat. Let's face it, had a bad year last year.
He did.
I think Montez Sweat's still probably close. Let's go, Jalen Johnson or Montez Sweat for the best.
I'm going Jalen Johnson. Okay. That's my number.
So
one.
So here's number one. Then can I have Sweat for number two? Can we go Sweat two?
I guess I'll give it to you.
Okay. You don't have to.
This is kind of my point, though. After that, talk to me.
Okay.
Because there's two options in my mind. There's two options.
TJ Edwards.
TJ Edwards.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And it's Kyler Gordon.
TJ Edwards, three? Yeah, let's go TJ Edwards, three. He seems to have been more impactful on the overall, just making more play because of the nature of
his
position.
And he's on the field more also.
So we'll go four Kyler Gordon. Who is the fifth best player on the Chicago Bears defense?
I would say, as of right now,
yes,
it's probably one of your imports. It's not anybody. No one. Dio Bingo and then
Grady Jarrett.
Grady Jarrett. It might be Grady Jarrett.
I wasn't even thinking about that.
But I'm saying. But that kind of tells you where this defense is.
Yeah.
In that, how quickly you run out of guys to throw into your top whatever. That's the point.
Is it Tremaine Edmonds?
No.
It's not.
I'm here to tell you no.
Is it Jervon Dexter?
No.
It's probably not.
And this is the problem with the Bears defense from a year ago.
Oh, man. I didn't think the Bears had a problem on defense, but maybe they do.
What?
No, of course they do.
They can't get to the quarterback.
They can't get to the quarterback, and they still... Well, now they've got a three technique.
Yes.
Grady Jarrett.
Exactly.
Right?
Maybe it is
Grady Jarrett.
So, again, I think Grady Jarrett...
It's not Tyreek Stevenson?
I wish you could see my face on the...
No. Terrell Smith? No.
Again.
Kevin Byard?
Kyler Gordon.
Yeah, Byard?
Byard's in
rhymes,
that...
Rhymes
he's
with
in
Bears.
That mid-tier mix. But my point is, Kyler Gordon's got to feel like, after getting this new contract, like, yeah, they know who I am. There's no doubt. We skipped over that whole part where Jalen Johnson and his contract negotiations got fuzzy, like, because is he going to get his money or not? No one at any point thought Kyler Gordon wasn't getting his money. And then we were just, you know, I'm sorry, maybe he was pleasantly surprised with how much money he got compared to other slot corners in the league.
We forgot a name. I am ashamed of myself. You shouldn't feel as bad. I'm the one that covers the Bears every day, so I feel ashamed right now. Andrew freaking Billings.
No, I was going to bring up Billings. Okay. I was going to bring up Billings, but he didn't play the back half of last season.
But I'm talking about in general, right? Like, okay. Montez Sweat had a bad year last year. I still think he's the second best defensive player on the Bears. Or maybe I'm saying that... Have you lost it? Hold on a second. Have you lost it for Montez Sweat?
Why was Montez Sweat brought here? To do what?
To get to the quarterback.
Did they get to the quarterback last season? It's a yes or no question. Did they satisfactorily get to the quarterback?
No, they did not.
Here's
the problem. I'm the only one, I feel like, in the media that has been fighting the Dio Dangbell thing. Like, people are like, watch the tape, Grody. Watch the tape. Watch the tape. He does a lot of stuff. 3.5 sacks.
Yeah, but some people consider pressures, and I know this is contrary to what popular opinion is, but some people say a pressure is just as good as a sack from an analytic standpoint, because you got there, you might not have brought him down, but you're affecting the play.
Is it to you, Marshall? I mean, would you rather 3.5? Would you rather all that stuff that you got to watch the tape for? Would you rather see Dio Dangbo get 12 sacks?
I'd rather see Dio.
That's the answer. Yeah. Okay. So wait, I got Billings at 5, by the way. So okay. Billings at 5, even though you want to put an import there, don't you?
But let's just go back over what I said. Okay. I said Kyler Gordon is a top 5 Bears defender, and he's not number 5. That was my overall point.
Mm, okay.
Are you with me on that premise?
Yeah, no, I am. I'm with you
okay,
on that premise.
Okay, so I just want Kyler Gordon to get his due, but at the same time saying some of this is relative to not good enough defenders on the Bears.
Yeah, or
impact players.
Yeah, well, you're right. In the case of Montez Sweat, at least last year, and maybe it's the outlier, last year not getting to the quarterback enough. But really, even earlier, before last year, Montez Sweat was not necessarily getting to the quarterback, but there is the Sweat effect, right? Do you believe in the Montez effect, the Sweat effect? Do you not believe in that all of a sudden, Marshall?
I'm unconvinced that it is as sweaty as it should be. How about that? 312-644-6767. You can text us to chime in here on Score Middays with Marshall Harris and Mark Grody. And listen, if you think Kyler Gordon is below 4, let me know who takes that spot. I just think, based on what he's done over the last 2 seasons, the consistency that's been there, both in the running game and in coverage, he has been multifaceted in his ability to make things happen.
Oh, yeah. And I think the part about his game that I really love that's like was low key early on is the physical part. Like, he will lay the wood. And I honestly think that when he first came in, I think that because we all made such a big deal about the ballet thing, that there was this misconception that somehow he wasn't going to hurt guys when he went out there and lay the lumber. And he does that. Like, he is a complete football player.
He's so complete that when we were trying to get hints, clues to how this internal audit was going with Ben Johnson and his coaching staff, because the first thing you want to know when you hire a new coaching staff is, okay, well, how do they see the players that they already have under contract who are still with the team? Who's most likely to be released? What positions do they feel like need to be upgraded? And it was very telling that the defensive coordinator, Dennis Allen, in his intro press conference, he wasn't naming names, but he named that name.
He named that name. Ben Johnson named that name. He's just a player that, you know who was like that last year, or when the Flus regime took over, and even Poles, was Cole Kmet. Now, I know we're completely different thing, different position, different side of the ball, but he was like that exemplary guy who was going to do everything right, and that's kind of like Kyler Gordon. Add that to Jalen Johnson, who does everything right. He gets his 4 years, $76 million, as you kind of alluded to earlier. So you're packing a punch when it comes to the money that you have spent in your secondary at this point.
Well, I think that the two things, and the reason that's not necessarily even apples and oranges, but it's hard to compare the Cole Kmet comments to the Kyler Gordon. When it's a guy like Cole Kmet, a skill position player, you have to find ways to get the ball in his hands.
Yeah.
Kyler Gordon, you just turn him loose.
Yeah.
He can do what you do.
He can put the ball in his hands whenever he feels like it. Go out there and get it. Do you want to do the top 5 offensive players?
We're good. Okay. Before we do that, I do want to hear exactly how Dennis Allen mentioned Kyler Gordon at that press conference.
I took a look a little bit at the pieces on defense. I felt like there were some pieces in place. You know, in particular, I think there's some things that we have to have in the secondary that I like. I think there's some pieces at linebacker that I'm encouraged by. I think there's a couple of spots up front that I feel like we've got some players. So I think the foundation is there defensively. And I think, look, when Ben asked me if I would be interested, there was a couple of places that I felt like had the pieces in place to potentially be a really good football team player. So I have a vision for how, you know, we can utilize him. And so I think the foundation for what we want to do is there.
Yeah. So, I find him to be a little vague now listening to that again. When he's like, oh, we got some pieces here. I think we got some linebacker. He's not really naming names.
Maybe he doesn't know the names yet. It was his introduction.
that
he didn't have
well.
A sheet in front of him with the depth chart that he had pulled up because it was an introductory press conference. And was that on Zoom or was that... That was on Zoom because that was the Grote
Day,
right?
Zoom. Yeah, it was Zoom. And I'm sorry.
That was Grote Day, right?
What day?
Grote. When
Grote?
Mark Grote from the...
Oh, was that Grote Day? That might have been Grote Day.
I think it was.
Okay, I get my days. There's been a lot of days. So
Dan
I get
Wheatier?
That's it. Yeah, it was Grote Day. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, you know, he's kind of blowing through those linebackers, and then I see a text here that says that he liked our list, but it says conspicuous that you did not mention Tremaine Edmonds.
No, we mentioned him. And
but
I said,
not his top five.
He's not top five.
He's not top five.
He's not top five.
He should be. I mean, the way that he's been paid, and he was Roquan Smith's replacement. Damn it.
And you know what? He might bounce back this year, and I'll be like, oh, that's definitely a top five impact player. But let's be honest, from the linebacker spot, I've seen T.J. Edwards do more from that spot.
Oh, 100%.
And I think that's why he's due up. But you know what? Let's go to your... What you wanted to do.
You want to do it?
Let's do offense right
now.
All right. So number one for me and number one for you. We may be on different pages just off the top. Joe Tooney.
Oh, wow. Wow. This guy with the Tooney. Okay. I mean, you can never really push back against a good offensive lineman. But I will see your Joe Tooney. We can put him on the list here. Okay, Joe Tooney.
So he's in the top five, though, right?
Yeah. We'll put him in the top five. God,
I knew he wasn't gonna be your number one because I was going between him and another player, and I was like,
yeah.
No,
and I think the other player was DJ Moore.
Sure was.
Okay, so I'm gonna get that would have been DJ Moore would have been
that's your one, and that's fine.
Yeah, we're just doing a draft style here. Okay, who's your so Tooney is the most important Bears offensive player. DJ Moore is the second. You have the third pick. Go ahead, Marshall.
Drew Dahlman.
Oh, look, this guy. Okay, so you want the center.
The
okay.
best. I'm saying these are the best performers.
Yeah.
I know what those guys' track records.
And pretty important, too. Pretty important. Okay, all right. So that's three.
Does he make your top five?
Do I? I guess.
See how you're... But that's my point with this entire roster.
No, it's great.
Because you don't know what you don't know yet.
You don't know what you don't know. You're right. Is it all going to work? Okay, four. Number four. I got to get Caleb in there.
All right, go ahead.
I got to get Caleb in there.
I figured that's what you would do.
Caleb Williams is the fourth best player, offensive player on the Bears. Number five. How about for number five? You can't say an offensive lineman.
You know I was about
I know
to,
you're
right?
going darn all right here, aren't you? I know you're thinking about darn all right. And don't give me Braxton Jones.
I was definitely not going Braxton Jones.
You're going Jonah
going
Jackson.
All right.
You're going Jonah Jackson.
I was definitely going darn all right, though. That's where I was going. He's a top 10 pick.
Okay.
He's been adequate. Like, that's a guy you're depending on. He's, for the most part, on a bad offensive line, has held his own.
Okay.
Okay, so if I can't go offensive line... If you can't go offensive line,
who would you go for our final place here?
I probably, even though last season did happen in the way it did, I'd probably still say Cole Kmet.
Okay. All right. What about the...
But that's only because I can't go offensive lineman. He's the closest thing to an offensive lineman I can take.
It's too late, man. You can't. You got to say it. You can't go back and explain it. What about... I guess I can't...
Who else do you want to push for that?
I want to say Rome, but I can't say Rome.
He's not there yet.
Are people just anti-DeAndre Swift?
Yeah.
I feel like he made some plays last year, even though he's not that true back in this loaded division. DeAndre Swift is
coming
a reliable
from the guy.
Back.
Hey, Robbie, I have a question.
But top five.
Hey, Robbie, I have a question.
Top five.
I have a question. Does he make Detroit top 11?
No, but Detroit's loaded. That's a completely different thing.
Did he the year before he got released? Did he make their top five?
No, he didn't.
Okay, so we're scratching and clawing to find number five.
Did DeAndre Swift not fumble in his first ever game against the Chicago Bears? Did that not happen?
That was a bad omen.
But
I mean, he got a speed option on fourth and goal.
Oh, we're blaming the play calling now.
Yeah,
he has no Dan Campbell, so
he has no individual agency now. It's just he can only do it.
No, Shane Waldron put him in a bad spot early in the year. That Colts game.
Listen, I'm just saying. It speaks to the way we're listing these things out. top five defense, top five offense. There are still questions that need to be answered before I'm all in on the Bears doing big things in 2025.
So that is so smart what you just said, because I felt so good about the offense, but we don't know yet. Is Rome going to take that next step? Is Caleb going to take that next step? Is he going to have better chemistry with DJ Moore? It's okay to say those two did not have good chemistry for a lot of last year. Is the running backs room going to get better? Is there somebody better than DeAndre Swift? So
is Cole Kmet going to be the primary catcher at the tight end position?
Exactly. Because, I mean, look, I had a lot of sympathy for Cole Kmet last year because he wasn't getting the ball. But somehow, some way, there wasn't a connection yet on the field between Caleb and Cole Kmet. So that those are concerns and things that you would think would take the next step, and we'll start to see it once we get cooking with the OTAs and the mini camps and the training camps and Bears.
Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons on the Score.
We've been watching Caleb Williams during the break. He told us he is healthy but fatigued with the kind of year that it's been, and he got that big hit and was kind of laying down over on the bench for a moment, but able to sit right back up.
This is the time of year when college seasons are ending, so they are long years. And when you're having the year that they're having, they're that much longer.
The fact that I've gone through a year, the fact, you know, that I had ups and downs, and, you know, we stayed strong and I stayed strong. And I think that's the difference to it so far for me and the feeling for me. And then obviously, you know, what Ben has been able to do, brings some excitement for me. So, you know, those have been the two main things of, you know, I've had a year under my belt now, of ups and downs and good and bad and things like that. And then, you know, the excitement of Ben being here and his creativity and all these different things.
We were talking earlier on how it's really great that the Bears have a very cool quarterback. And he plays outside of just being the Bears quarterback, that he can move in spaces that we're not used to seeing a Bears quarterback move. And there's a great illustration of that inside of Esquire magazine. Brian O'Keefe, executive editor of Esquire, you look at the stories that Brian has done over the years and the people that he's talked to, and you go, huh, why was Caleb a choice to spotlight? Shane found Brian O'Keefe, and now he joins us on the Circa Sports Illinois hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. Brian, thanks for joining us. Let me start there. What was it about Caleb Williams that you said, you know, he is worthy of a deeper dive and a profile?
Yeah, great to be with you guys, first of all. And well, we found Caleb interesting for a number of reasons. You know, first of all, we are at Esquire, we're obviously writing about men in America, men of all different kinds. We were going to do a big sports package, the Mavericks of Sports, and we were looking for the right cover subject for that. And to me, Caleb was interesting for a few different reasons. I mean, first of all, you know, a guy who has had incredible success, Heisman Trophy winner, number one pick, came into the NFL and kind of, you know, had a up and down first year. So this sort of the jury is out on him. He's got to prove himself. But also all the off the field stuff he does, you know, the interest he has, he's kind of a different kind of character from an NFL quarterback, very confident. You know, the confidence to launch an investment firm before he's even played his first snap in the NFL, the confidence to paint his nails and show himself, show his real personality. So all that came together. And I think there is a tension, you know, especially for Bears fans to see what's really going to happen with him on the field and with the team. And I think all that together, you know, just really makes him a really compelling character.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at some of the most recent covers of athletes chosen. It's the big guys. Mm-hmm. It's Paul Skeens. It's Donovan Mitchell.
It's LeBron.
It's Dan Hurley. You know, Lindsey Vonn. These are people who are, I'm not going to say they're bigger than the game, but they're big. They're bigger they have a presence outside of the game. They're more than just the game. Maybe that's what I'm searching for. And I brought up this point earlier that I think it does matter to have a cool quarterback. I think it does. It's the Bears haven't had a guy that Esquire magazine would even consider since Jim McMahon 40 years ago. And I think while at the end of the day, what he does or doesn't do on the football field is going to write the story for him in terms of his Bears career. That the story of Caleb Williams is being told outside of Chicago. And I think that plays into why you chose him and the things you just alluded to. But when you go to pick a subject to write about or spend time about or travel to Europe with, that story to being told outside of the city, I feel like matters almost more than the people who are fans of Caleb Williams in the city he plays in.
Yeah, well, that's interesting that I'm sure a lot of Bears fans would say they mostly care what he does on the field. But, you know, looking at him as a character and somebody that we were interested in and somebody who's going to be the face of a franchise, I think the stuff that you're alluding to is all part of the picture. I mean, just the fact that we went to Copenhagen to photograph him, for me to interview him. You know, he was living in Copenhagen for part of the offseason because his girlfriend lives in Copenhagen, but also, you know, he's a guy who's very interested in European culture, in fashion, in food, you know, in different perspectives around the world. He's not somebody who's just, you know, he does live and breathe football and has been since he was a kid, but that's not all he lives and breathes. You know, he's also really interested in all kinds of subjects, in business. And I think, you know, if he can pull that off, if he can be successful as an investor and a business person off the field, while at the same time leading the franchise and being a top NFL quarterback, that will be an incredible story.
Brian O'Keefe, the executive editor of Esquire, joins us here on The Score to talk about the brilliant piece on Caleb Williams in Esquire. You need to check it out, find it online, go pick up the magazine itself with Caleb. He also looks great.
Yeah.
And the photographs are amazing. The clothes are outstanding. When you sat down with him, Brian, what struck you as unique about him?
Well, you know, he has a quiet confidence about him. I definitely felt that when I was sitting with him and talking. He's kind of low-key unless, you know, something stirs his competitive juices a little bit. And then you can see the competitor. Anytime, you know, he talked about a game situation or we did a video sit-down where there was like a quiz involved and you could see him like getting competitive. But I just think like the breadth of his interest to be such a young guy. And this is another reason that we were really interested in Caleb is he was really in that first generation of athletes, college football players in particular, who benefited from the NIL change in college football. And he was able to earn millions of dollars in endorsements as a college player. He was essentially a professional player for his last, you know, couple of years in college. And I think that, you know, these guys who are coming out now, they've had a different experience in terms of dealing with business people, getting paid large amounts of money. So they can come into the league with a more sophisticated sort of appreciation for what's available to them off the field, as opposed to just trying to grind and, you know, impress the coaches.
Considering your background, being the editor-in-chief of Fortune, what's it like for you now to talk with athletes, whether and it doesn't have to just be Caleb, although you're right about where college athletics is going and how it changes things, but what's it like for you now to talk with athletes and understand that it's about the brand that they are as well as the player that they are?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's tough to imagine being that age and being able to have the discipline to do everything, you know, playing quarterback in the NFL. And this is another reason I was really interested in doing this story myself and writing about Caleb. Basically, half the teams in the NFL are always looking for a quarterback. There's only about a third of the teams in the NFL, maybe slightly more, who feel really good about their quarterback situation at any given time. You know, so there's really only about like maybe 12 to 14 guys on planet Earth at any one given time who the league would look and say, yeah, that guy is definitely a winning quarterback in the NFL. So, you know, it's really tough to be that guy. You can be an incredible athlete, have an incredible arm, you look like an All-American, and you still can't make it in the NFL. It's just such an elite set of talents. So somebody trying to do that and have the confidence to deal with serious business people and have the discipline to try to, like, maintain, you know, their business matters over here and their football matters over here and do it all at a high level. I mean, it's just an unbelievable, you know, real task for anybody.
I spent the bulk of my television career in storytelling and doing documentaries and trying to basically, you know, travel and tell humanize people in a way that most of the time they are put on a pedestal for because they're larger than life, whether it's the money that puts them there, what they're doing for a living, etc. Very few times do we actually get a peek behind the curtain. The preparation that goes into an interview like this, I know, is long and arduous, and you're trying to pick up every rock to make sure no stone goes unturned, but you always find out a new nugget, no matter what. And I'm sure you've had this happen 1,000 times in your career. What is something about Caleb Williams that you learned that really struck you in a way that you're like, man, this guy, if this all checks out, like Chicago and the Bears are going to have something?
Well, I mean, you know, to go back to what we said before, the fact that he was spending time in Copenhagen, lurking around in coffee shops and studying football on his iPad, that was surprising to start with. You know, talking to some of his coaches and teammates from the past, like talking to the strength coach at USC, who was the strength coach at Oklahoma when he got there, and then, you know, they all moved to USC together. You know, that was really interesting too, because before Caleb became the starter, he, you know, he developed this routine with Benny Wiley, the strength coach, of like doing a full workout on game days in the morning. And that was his way of staying intense and staying ready. And we're talking about a guy, you know, who was a true freshman coming in, and he didn't waste much time before he got his way onto the field. But I think also, you know, that goes back to him when he was like 10 years old, telling his dad he wants to be the best quarterback in the world, and his dad saying, okay, I'm taking you at your word, and we're going to develop the plan to do that. And, you know, basically Caleb was doing two-a-days when he was 11, 12, 13 years old, getting up at 5:30 in the morning, going and doing a workout, going to school, and then going back and doing another workout, and his dad held him to that. You know, there's a famous example of that kind of thing from the past. Todd Marinovich, for the old school folks who remember him.
Yeah, the buttermilk on the calves and all that stuff. It was crazy.
There was a famous Esquire article about him and how he didn't work out. I mean, he was great for a while, but like, you know, he wasn't able to maintain any balance in his life. And Caleb had a version of that experience and is still, he's this, you know, seemingly super well-adjusted, confident guy who's talking to me about playing 19 more years in the NFL and not setting any caps on his goals for what he wants to achieve, and still at the same time being a business guy. Like, that is really, that's an interesting guy. You know, that doesn't mean he's going to succeed in the NFL at the highest level, but somebody who can be that measured and well-rounded in what they're doing is, you know, that's unusual.
He opened up to you, and he's been pretty transparent with us here in Chicago. I don't have any complaints, but him opening up to how much it hurt. Like, we knew it hurt when they lost that Washington game, but him opening up to you about how much it hurt and how it impacted him, what did you take away from him telling you about how he tried to rebuild himself after that?
Yeah, that was a really interesting moment in our conversation. I mean, you know, he's a guy who's gotten some attention for letting his emotions show and gotten some criticism probably in some corners. There's some people, you know, he had a game in college where he cried and after they lost, and some people were criticizing him for that. But he's confident in who he is. And, you know, I think that goes back to just his burning desire to win. I think that, you know, if he wasn't able to deliver a win for his team and for himself and for the fans, that's going to cut to his core. But he also, you know, any rookie coming into the NFL, being a starting quarterback right away, that's an incredible challenge. And I do think, like, all the losing, you know, as he said, like, he's never lost that much. And that wore down on him. And he did say, you know, I cried some tears. I went home and I was just beaten down physically, mentally, you know, losing a bunch of games. One detail that he told me that didn't end up in the story was He drew some inspiration in that moment from Kobe Bryant. Kobe Bryant is one of his heroes. And he was thinking about the moment in Kobe's career when Kobe, you know, was asked if he had hit a wall. And he said, no, but it doesn't matter if I did. So what if I did? You know, and that was kind of like the mindset that Caleb wanted to have. It doesn't matter if I'm worn down. And he definitely felt like he rallied and the team rallied a little bit at the end of the season. And of course, they ended, you know, with the win over Green Bay, which was a way to go out on a high note.
A Kobe comp for Caleb Williams is it's special. And I might be asking an unfair question here, and I know that, but after what you just experienced and wrote about and gave us a real true profile look behind the curtain of Caleb Williams after year one with the Bears, if I said it's 2035 and we are looking at Caleb Williams and we're doing it based off of your just one trip with him and your get to know you feature, what do you think his Bears career looks like?
That is a tough question. It's really hard to go out on a limb because, you know, I mean, I cited some statistics in the story about the number of quarterbacks, the percentage of quarterbacks that actually make it, even first round draft pick quarterbacks who actually become playoff winning quarterbacks. I will say, you know, I mean, he obviously has the athletic ability. He's shown it at every level until now. You talk to him. I talked to DJ Moore. He had a lot of confidence in him. You know, Lincoln Riley has obviously a lot of confidence in him, having coached him at USC. And I see a lot of determination there. He's got the ability. It's just very hard to, you know, predict anything with any kind of degree of accuracy. I think, you know, he's going to be really committed to it. Despite these other things he's got going on off the field, like he definitely comes across as a competitor. I just, you know, if you look even a year before, Bryce Young was drafted number one and the Panthers put him behind a terrible offensive line and he looked like a terrible quarterback. And CJ Stroud looked like the guy, you know, he led his team to the playoffs as a rookie. And then Caleb's year, you know, the Bears were obviously better than the Panthers, but they didn't have a great offensive line. It's tough to look good behind a good off or behind a bad offensive line. And Jaden Daniels looked like the guy. So these things can change really quickly. I think that Caleb has every opportunity and the ability, though, to, when you're looking back at it 10 years from now, to be a guy who led the Bears to the playoffs a few times. And, you know, who knows?
Brian, it's a brilliant piece. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for jumping on with us. And honestly, if you ever do another sports profile and you just want people to know about it, don't hesitate to hit us up because your work is fantastic.
Thanks so much. It's great to talk with you guys.
That is Brian O'Keefe of Esquire.
Really good stuff.
Go read the Caleb Williams feature that he did. It is quite good, and you'll find out a lot more about your quarterback. Got a little bit of breaking news that will interest Cubs fans. Breaking news on the Score is brought to you by Wildfire. Join Wildfire Restaurants as they celebrate 30 years of serving delicious food and creating memories. This from Taylor McGregor. The Cubs made some roster moves today. Matt Shaw optioned to AAA Iowa. Vidal Bruhan had been reinstated from the 10-day IL. Eli Morgan placed on the 15-day IL with right elbow impingement. Luke Little recalled from AAA. Daniel Palencia recalled from AAA. Nate Pearson optioned. There's a lot of stuff there. And I think Matt Shaw needs to go work on that leg kick.
Yep.
Because not getting around on stuff and very susceptible to pitches inside and high.
Hey, you talk about patience and impatience, some of the that we've heard about the bullpen. This is the Cubs they're not wasting time. Not wasting time.
We'll be back and land the plane next here on The Score.
Olin, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, guys. I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
We are getting fired up for the draft, getting excited about what is about to happen or what could happen. We should mention first, congratulations to you. You're being honored by the Gridiron Greats. You are a Hall of Fame Gridiron Great. That is the first of hopefully many Halls of Fame for you, Jess.
What do you think, it's an honor, man. And it's a great organization that helps out former players that are in need of assistance, and they do a really nice job. So first of all, it's an honor just to go into any Hall of Fame. You know, it's always an honor when someone calls you and says, we'd like to honor you, and you get a chance to thank people who have helped you on your path, on your way to where you, to the things that you have accomplished, because obviously none of us do this alone, right? So anytime you get the chance to stand on a stage and thank people that have helped you get to where you are is always a nice thing to do. But also when you're with an organization that is helping, things that is dear to my heart, right? Former players who are struggling maybe with health issues and things that they are going through.
And you will be honored on May 30th at the Hyatt Regency O'Hare, and tickets are available. You should check it out. Go to, I'm trying to see the site, but Gridiron Greats, GGAHOF 2025, and you can inquire about tickets. It would be a very memorable night, to be sure. So congratulations on that. And Olin, I know, you know, we sit here and we talk every year, and every year it feels like the Bulls win the offseason, and it feels, the Bears win the offseason, and it feels like just hiring the coach and some of the moves they made, obviously finally getting to the offensive line, finally adding help to the defensive line. I believe they feel they have five new starters on the line of scrimmage. When you look at that, I got to tell you, it's delightful to see them address it and to see, but it seems like a good start more than the finished product. And we've talked about this over the years about having people in place for when different players are going to be, there's some stopgap measures here, and you're going to need players to take over from the guys that you're bringing in right now, other than the center. That might be the only long-term guy on the offensive line. So hopefully they keep that in mind come next week.
Yeah, hopefully Jonah Jackson finds his Detroit Lions form the way he was playing down there in Detroit. Really good left guard for the Detroit Lions for years, right? And obviously surrounded by great football players and Taylor Decker and Frank Ragnow. And you can name all the, you know, Penei Sewell and all the guys they had around them there at Detroit. But like you're saying, Molly, they had to go out and try to fix a position that they couldn't fix through the draft, right? And they went and got Grady Jarrett because we're hoping that Jervon Dexter at some point takes the next step here. Our Pickens takes another step, and hopefully we get Andrew Billings back, who I'm a huge fan of, to watch him play football. But like you're saying, they went out and they try to fix it through free agency and poured a lot of money into that offensive line, something I've been asking for here for years. So can't complain too much about the choices they made. You know, I don't know if I would have went about it in that way, of the way they try to fix it. They went out and got an older Joe Tooney from the Kansas City Chiefs. They got Dahlman, who was the best center on the market. So I'm happy they did that. They went in, got their offensive line, and now we're all, obviously, when you get all that stuff, you say to yourself, okay, what's not fixed? Let's talk about that for hours, right? So let's talk about the left tackle position, and should they draft someone there and put someone else there and add some more competition? And obviously, as you know, Molly, for a long time for me, the answer is yes. The answer is always put assets into those rooms. But guys, the biggest problem obviously for years has been the fact that they have not developed players in those positions who are guys who've been here for a long time, who knows what it takes to win in the NFL in Chicago. And like you're saying, Molly, they went on and got the head coach who brought some excitement here, and he knows all the right things to say. And nowadays, when you look at a lot of these young guys who come in, whether it be general managers, head coaches, assistant coaches, OCs, even players, they all know how to tell you about their process and what it takes to fix things. It seems like they all know exactly what to say, especially a head coach who has an agent based in Chicago, right? He knows what you want to hear here. But can you actually fix it? Can you actually take the day-to-day problems and fix them? Those are the things that we are going to be watching from this new Chicago Bears staff.
Olin, I'm all for adding assets to the offensive line room, and if you can upgrade at left tackle, great. But when a lot of the scouting reports I've read about the two tackles that have top 10 grades, both Will Allen and Armand Membu, I've read, you know, if maybe you're starting left tackle from day one, if not, maybe you're starting left tackle or possibly guard of the future. I'm looking to get a starter at number 10. Are you okay with them drafting one of these offensive linemen if it's a depth pick or a guy who's going to be a starter a year or two down the road? Or in that case, do you just go and get a starter at another position?
Yeah, Rami, it's a great question, man. And these left tackles, right? They don't grow on trees, right? These guys who play for 10 to 13 years, tackles, period, right? Lane Johnson in Philadelphia, he doesn't play left tackle. I was looking at something today, guys, that was crazy. Do you know that Lane Johnson was drafted in 2013? He has the same offensive line coach all the way through his whole career, wow. Jeff Stoutland. Wow. To me, that was crazy. But anyway, wow. To your point, when you pick in the first round, when you pick top 10, you are looking for a blue chip player, right? You're looking for a difference maker. You're looking for a guy you put on that field and teams have to game plan for. They're scared of a guy like Darnell Wright, who seems to be developing, right? A guy, when he took Rome Odunze, when he took a wide receiver, a guy like those kind of blue chip talent, a guy's athletic ability and their college film matches up. Guys that when you fly to their college campus, everyone is raving about them. The kind of guy you want in your building. The kind of guy I'm talking about that the Chicago Bears offensive line needs. If you think Will Campbell is that guy, you take him. But I'm like you. When you watch film of him and Membo, you're like, okay, I always say the offensive line is like a basketball team, right? You want a point guard. You want a center. You want a yep. power forward. You want guys who do different things. Your left tackle is kind of your pass block specialist, especially when you have a right-hand quarterback, especially when your quarterback's name is Caleb Williams. He likes to throw the ball. He likes to hold on to the ball. He likes to extend plays. So you got to make sure whoever you put in that left tackle position is ready to block 3, 4, 5 seconds. Keep your quarterback clean so he can extend plays and get that ball down the field to the good weapons that the Chicago Bears do have. So I'm like you, if they don't check off that blue chip, the 10-year guy, the Pro Bowler, the All-Pro, the All-Decade type performer, then you do have to take the best player on your board there at number 10 because you do have 4 picks in the top 72.
Yeah, I think we can separate what they have to come away with and what they take first. And I'm trying to contain myself a little bit because I think we're in a honeymoon stage here with Ben Johnson. And I can't help but wonder, Olin, how much influence he has on the number 10 pick. I'm sure he's going to be saying, I need this, this, and this to run my scheme correctly, and we'll really improve if we can get this guy or that guy. They're apparently looking at tape. Now, a coach can't do enough scouting or look at enough tape or figure out. You need a general manager. You need a draft scout. You need people to know. You need scouts to pick certain rounds of the draft, for God's sake. Your coaches mm-hmm. aren't going to be aware of what the players are, what the positions are. So if they decide to take player X at number 10, I have vowed not to be upset about it. I don't care if you know what I mean? Like I'm going to just say, all right, that's the coach's pick, and I'm going to go along with it. Especially if it's a tight end or a running back or a non-premium but important position in their offense, one that you, if you can get a great player at, would make you better. There's also part of me that thinks like, boy, you know, maybe that's the spot for a defensive lineman. Maybe mm-hmm. you get lucky if a certain tackle were to drop to there, the kid from Michigan somehow winds up there, or you know, you got a pass rush. I'm trying to contain myself, but if they don't come out of the first couple rounds, the first three picks without another offensive lineman, I'm going to be heartily disappointed. Because it means they're not learning from the lesson of where they're at now.
Yeah, I'm sure Ben Johnson has a ton of input right now, right, in that building. And from what we understand about him, he's very detail-oriented. So I'm sure he's sitting there in meetings, Ryan Poles, Ian Cunningham, Jeff King, Breck Ackley, their director of college scouting, Francis St. Paul, their assistant director of college scouting. They're all in meetings. This is their Super Bowl, Molly, like you're talking about, man. This is an exciting time. Up there at Alice Hall, they got a new coaching staff. They have all these scouts who have been there, and they want to get this thing fixed, man. They want to get it moving in the right direction. Like what you're talking about is a critical point, I think, for them, right? Study your history. Why is Eddie Goldman not here? Why is he not here as one of your leaders, a guy who can teach guys what it means to be a Chicago Bear? Why is James Daniels not here anymore? Why is Tevin Jenkins not here anymore? We're talking about linemen. We're talking about developing both sides of the line of scrimmage. Why do you have to go get Grady Jarrett? Why do you have to go get Joe Tooney to help you teach young players how to play football, how to develop in the NFL? You got to take young guys, and then you got to teach them. And over there in Philadelphia, they're teaching you how to do it, right? If you watch what they have done with drafting Cam Jurgens, well, I hate to say this, but it was taken after Jaquan Brisker, the Philadelphia Eagles center, and letting him learn from Jason Kelce, right? Drafting Jalen Carter and letting him learn from Fletcher Cox. Having Lane Johnson there, having these older guys there, they always say, every building you go to, they'll say, there's the Chicago Bears way, the Philadelphia Eagles way, the Kansas City Chiefs way. What is that? You have to define that. What is culture? Who teaches the culture? Not the coaches, guys. The coaches don't teach the culture. They don't. The players do. The players teach you what it means to be a Chicago Bear in that building, what it means to show up, to work out, to develop your game, to watch film, to find guys to teach you how to be an NFL pro. So like you say, Mully, they have a lot of influence in there. It's a huge time for them. Hopefully they have studied their history. Me and you have talked about that on the pre- and post-game shows for years now. Why aren't they drafting linemen? Why aren't developing them? Now, to Ryan Poles' credit, right? Darnell Wright, Javon Dexter, Tyreek Stevenson, right? But he took three out of his first four picks, Zach Pickens, he took linemen. But why haven't they developed? Ben Johnson, if you are the studier that we hear about, if you are the guy who studies details, then you need to get into the weeds of why in that building they can't develop players to stay there a long time to teach people what is the culture and what is the Chicago Bear way.
Olin, we could talk about this forever, but I think that one thing that I've appreciated a bit from Ben Johnson is just how forthright he's been about how players, we need this guy to do this, we need this, we need this. He's kind of making guys uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. He says, we got to get the quarterback under center. He has no problem telling you what he needs. But when he says, when he talks about Baxter Jones in particular, and he says, we need more anchor, we need him to put on, you know, make sure that he can drop the anchor and settle in at that position. The guy's coming off an ankle injury, a surgery. Mm-hmm. He probably isn't ready for the beginning of camp. It just might be the wrong time to try to put weight on a guy or to try to build his arse up a little bit so he can hold up. and then you look at Kieran Amagaji, and I'm just wondering, is he a legitimate ready to – he had no offseason. He was thrown to the Wolves last year. Is he have enough time to be a competitor in camp? Or, like, worst case scenario, what if you have to start the year with Tooney moving out to left tackle like he had to do?
Oh, no.
I shouldn't even have brought it up. But they need more at that position. So I just want them to come away with someone else to add to that mix. Is that a fool's errand on my part?
Man, Mully, it's mid-April. You're trying to ruin my morning. For the draft, and you got Joe Tooney playing left tackle. All the way back to your first points about Ben Johnson, and we talked about the process of these young guys always come in here nowadays, and they can explain to you their process, man, down to the last detail. They can talk to you for hours, and they sound great. But it's always the question always is, we want him to put on weight. How? Right. The question is always how.
Right.
How do you want him to do that? How do you want him to build his anchor? How do you want to? That always sounds good to just say that. Right. He's got to be able to build it. He's got to be able to build his anchor for 3 or 4 years. The question is, why hasn't he done that? Who in that? You have a lot of the same guys in that building. Right. A lot of the same people there that Braxton has been here with the whole time. The different O-line coach, but a lot of that strength staff has been here. Right. They just elevated the head strength coach. They hired a few new guys, but that strength staff is who they're talking about. Mully, hips, hamstrings is your anchor for NFL football player. Look, strong is strong. Big isn't strong. Okay, so these are things that you have to talk about. And like you're talking about, Mully, if your ankle is bad, how does it absorb force when you get run into? I don't want to bore the people on the radio, but as you know, Mully, I do a lot of this, right? I do a lot of training of offensive linemen and talking to guys. And I've trained with Braxton Jones. Haven't seen him in years. Seen Kieran Amagaji. I've only seen him once or twice. But these are guys who have a lot to improve on, right? And Kieran had an injury, too, coming out of college. He has a quad problem, and he has to get that fixed. So we're talking about that left tackle position. You're talking about kicking Joe Tooney out. I almost hung up the phone, but I'll stay on this interview here. It's just, hey, buddy, this team, as excited as you are about them, as excited about this new draft, as excited as you are about this new coaching staff, and getting this thing turned around. They have more questions than answers right now, obviously, right? We know we've watched the years they've been through. We know the last playoff game they won. I was on the field. I can barely walk onto a field now. Wow. That's how long ago it was. So they have a lot to work on up there. They have questions that they have to answer. A lot of answers sound great, right? It always sounds great. But in my mind, every time someone says something, I always think to myself, how? Please define that for me. Well, we're going to have him put on weight and drop his anchor. I see a lot of heavy guys who can't stop a bull rush, right? That doesn't mean you can stop a bull rush. Braxton Jones also has long arms. He should probably work on his punch, dealing out there, stopping guys, throwing the hands out there, getting them slow down. So a lot of things they got to work on up there. A lot of that offensive line problems, with Joe Tooney and Jonah Jackson and Dahlman, looks a lot better now. They have a lot more assets in that room. That offensive line, if I had to guess, is going to be better. Coach Roshar, their new offensive line coach, very well respected offensive line guy, teaches the fundamentals, teaches the game the right way. Getting that position moving in the right direction is huge for this team.
Great stuff, Olin. Thanks a ton. Congrats again. Can't wait to talk to you on draft day, right after draft day. I think we'll be on that Saturday. Great stuff. Thank you, buddy.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Olin.
That's Olin Kreutz.
Spiegel and Holmes show flashback.
Check Todd out at The Ringer. He's doing incredible stuff with the Todd McShay Show.
Chicago's in kind of this weird spot, right? They're hoping for quarterbacks to go. I think potentially two could go before they pick at 10. And then there's about six blue chip players. I named five of them. I would throw Jalen Walker in there. I think Campbell's going to go at 4. The offensive tackle, Will Campbell from LSU, to go to the Patriots at 4 would be my guess right now. And so you get down to 10, and it's like, who's left? I just had this mock draft that came out today, Mock 3.0. If Tyler Warren's there, you run it in.
Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons on The Score.
That was Todd McShay with us last week. It was a really good conversation that we had with him. A little bit of breaking news, not that we didn't know that this was happening, but the fact that it's official is the breaking news element of it. Breaking news on The Score is brought to you by Wildfire. Join Wildfire Restaurants as they celebrate 30 years of serving delicious food and creating memories. It is official. Kyler Gordon has signed an extension, a 3-year extension through 2028. There are quotes from the Bears, including this one. We are excited to have Kyler remain a member of the Chicago Bears for years to come. That's from Ryan Poles. He went on to say, Kyler will be a big part of our defense, and we look forward to his continued ascension on our team, close quote. Head coach Ben Johnson said this, we are fired up to secure Kyler as a mainstay on our defense and a dependable component of our team. Our staff cannot wait to get to work with Kyler. Close quote. Ryan McGuffey is in for Speaks today. What do you think of this, Guff? What do you think of them making the extension here for Kyler Gordon? And that's a great quote from Ben Johnson. Our staff cannot wait to get to work with him.
Well, he would know. I mean, he had to build offensive and schemes around this guy for the last few years in Detroit. You know how there's some deals that you look at when a guy gets an extension or signs a free agent deal and you go, ooh. Like I'm glad, but
this is a lot. That seemed like a lot.
This doesn't feel that way.
This feels
perfect. 3 years, $40 million. He resets the market for slot corners, but I feel like they kind of jumped that too. Meaning they might have reset it at a lower number. That's going to get he will hold that title for a short term. We know that because there's the next man up. I think in Tennessee. Will be the next to probably reset the market. But I love the timing of the deal. It's early April, mid-April. It's before the draft. It doesn't screw you in the salary cap. And it's a player that has done nothing but elevate his game year after year. Kind of bumpy rookie year in the last couple of years. When he was off the field last year, you felt it. And when he came back, you felt it. And I love everything about it. There was a lot of smoke about this happening in the offseason. They didn't need to do it, of course, but it certainly gives you that pretty good feeling in the back of your mind, knowing that Kyler Gordon's a Bear for the future.
Yeah, and look, this guy, we have Jalen Johnson on. I think Jalen Johnson is great. I think Kyler Gordon, as it stands right now, is the most important player on their defense. And to speak to your point, the fact that they got him on a deal where even if it's just evenly split cap hits of $13 million, and I don't know yet, but even if it's just $13 million against the cap, it's nothing. Like, it's nothing for a player that produces at the level that he does.
Yeah, and that's what I'm talking about. That's when you see that number, the first that you hear, oh, Bears extend Kyler Gordon. Like, okay, let's see. Oh.
Would you look at that?
Like, everyone wins. The player wins, the team wins, and the NFL PA wins because we have now
a reset market.
A new reset market. And I'll be damned that you can actually do this. And this is what worries me, not to bring the Bulls into it, but back to our earlier discussion about Giddey. You don't have to be the team that dictates the market on the player. You can let him go out there and see what he's worth before you go, let's give you $35 million a year if you're a $23 million player.
It's beautiful, too, because you reward a guy who's played as hard as he can, that does all of the dirty stuff, along with the spectacular. And that's kind of a rare thing. Usually there are guys on defenses that do the dirty stuff, right?
Yep.
Like, they're doing the dirty work so that other guys can make plays. Kyler is doing the dirty work and making the plays.
Perfect combo.
Seeing him shed blocks, seeing him split blocks when he's on blitzes, seeing him want to attack the run game of the opponent, all of that stuff means, hey, I think that you're a special player. So this to me works out on a bunch of fronts, including goodwill inside of your locker room, to see a guy that's busted his ass, like, get the spoils of that. Like, that's a very cool thing.
Yeah, and again, before the draft, does that now check off something on your wish list or move the priority down? Not that the Bears are always looking for help in the secondary.
As they should.
In the safety market, like, I think you can make an argument. Like, they should probably draft a safety. But knowing that you have him locked up prior to round one of the NFL draft, you can almost take the highlighter and put it right over that position of need and call it a position of strength. And now you prioritize yourself in the mid rounds at other positions of need and or strength.
So now we can actually kind of get into the conversation of number 10, because I know that's something that you want to talk about, Ryan McGuffey, who is in for Matt Spiegel today. Jason Leisure is going to join us in about 15 minutes, by the way. So how are you viewing this with the Bears picking at number 10?
I've been sitting back like on a beach chair with an umbrella drink, because that's how I feel the Bears should be. I really do. I think that they are in a really, really great position for multiple reasons. And most notably, they don't need a quarterback. They don't need a receiver. We can make arguments about running back and tight end, et cetera. They need quite a few different positions, but none of them are like, oh my God, they definitely need a tight end, or oh my God, they definitely need a left guard or right tackle. Because of what they did in the offseason, they're in a position where they can let everyone else fight it out. Let the chips and the desperation fall ahead of you. You know what no one has right now at Hallis Hall? A hot seat. No one. So let all the other GMs and all the other noise and all the other stuff going, uncertainty going around, fight in front of you and see how the chips fall. Someone's going to fall that's not supposed to fall. Someone's going to go higher than they're supposed to go.
Someone's going to get desperate for a quarterback. Actually, a lot of people are going to get desperate for a quarterback. At least three franchises are going to get desperate for a quarterback, because they are the resources for quarterbacks in this year's draft in particular, not great. So that's why you have seen Jackson Dart all of a sudden, like, wait, what? He's a first-round pick? That's why you go, wait, Jalen Milroe has been invited to the draft?
I was like, wow. Yeah.
But when you think about it, you go, if I'm a team at the bottom of the first round and I have room to draft a freak athlete at the position that needs some time, yeah.
Yeah. But you're going to have a team that doesn't have time.
You're
That's
right
the
about
beauty
that.
Of the NFL draft, is that time is not on everyone's side. And that's where I think the Bears have a unique advantage on a lot of teams in the league. Sitting right there at 10, where it's high enough to warrant trading up and low enough to let things dictate positioning and need in front of you. And as we've seen with this, it's a very deep draft. There's not a – the quarterback market is – this is as bad of a quarterback market as we've seen in a long time. But don't tell a desperate GM that.
Right.
Don't tell a desperate GM that.
They every year talk themselves into quarterbacks that don't particularly make sense. And I think that it's happening kind of in both ways, too. I feel like Shadur at number two seems crazy to me.
Yep.
But I also think Shadur at 27 seems crazy to me. You know, like both of those things seem off by a hair. And just like magically, the Jackson Dart thing is hysterical.
It's awesome.
Because no one was even thinking about Jackson Dart. He's like, oh, would you look at that? Mid-round in the first round, maybe higher than that because exactly of what you're talking about. And the Bears are in a position where they don't need one of those.
Nope.
And if you don't need a quarterback, that gives you a great bargaining position inside of the draft. And if you what you want, like as a Bears fan, is on draft day for the quarterbacks to go.
You want three in the top nine.
100%.
Three in the top nine. And that phone, Ryan Pohl's phone, he can't. There's so many incoming calls that he can't keep up with them. That he has the incoming. He's got other people working the phones because there's so many calls coming in going, screw it, we need Dart. We need Dart at 10. Or we need Shadur. Jackson Dart goes 9, and Sanders is still on the board. And people are going, we can't wait this long. Ryan Poles, what's it going to take? Well, it's going to take next year's first, your current pick in the first, and a second. Yeah, and then you'll move down four slots and still get a damn good stud. Not a good player. You're going to get a stud, and you're going to get the stud that fits your scheme or your personnel or your locker room, maybe more so than the teams of desperation.
A lot of draft people are saying that if we're talking about picks 6 through 30, the guys are pretty much, outside of the quarterbacks, are pretty much the same.
Yep.
And the Bears have a bunch of different positions that they can use and say, all right, let's bolster up offensive line. Let's make sure that we have depth at guard, even though we went out and spent money this year at guard. Why don't we follow some of the models that we've seen, like the Eagles that said, well, if we find a great guard, we're not going to not draft him just because we have one. It gives us depth and flexibility on the offensive line to do so. If you're thinking defensive end, if the quarterbacks go first, that knocks everyone down a couple of spots. And maybe you end up with the player that you always wanted, even if you're trading out of the coveted number 10.
I mean, beautifully said. That's why I think if I were ranking what I would want, and there'd be three players, I think, in that number 10 slot that I think it's very clear they're taking Genty if he's available. I don't expect him to be available. Two or three players, maybe, that if they fall to that spot, it's a you run to the podium. I think taking the call and moving down for me feels more likely because of what you just said about 6 through 30 and knowing that they have 39 and 41 and what you can get. You're going to get three really good football players in the first 41 picks. You should, unless you screw it up.
But you should get three starters.
Three starters.
Even if it's not starters for 2025.
Three starters. And certainly three big contributors for 2025.
I'm good with that. But I think that you've answered some of your questions guard to guard. The tackle thing's kind of interesting.
Definitely interesting. That's why you're rooting for quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. Because there are several. It's a deep tackle market. There's a deep tackle stud market. And if four quarterbacks were to get picked in the top nine, there is an unbelievable player there at nine for the Bears. Root like hell for desperation and panic. That's what you want. If you're a Bears fan, scream to the mountaintops that teams like, I mean, we know the Giants are up against it, but they're already higher than the Bears. Scream for the teams behind the Bears, okay? What's going on in Pittsburgh? Is Aaron Rodgers going to play again?
That's a great question.
And they're doing the same thing. At some point, do they pull a Josh Heupel and go, you know what? We don't need you here. We don't need Aaron to wait, come out of a darkness retreat. And then they get desperate and go, seeing the Steelers desperate is that it's almost like an oxymoron. But there are teams behind the Bears because of what happens in front of them. They're not desperate today, Lawrence, but they will be in 2 weeks.
Steelers 5-hour meeting with Shador Sanders. 5-hour meeting that went very well, accordingly.
Great. Move on up and come get him.
Yep, he's yours.
You know, do what you need to do. But they could go even before that, because you start looking like the Raiders, they have a quarterback, but they have an older quarterback.
Yep.
Get the quarterback and get him ready to see where you're at. And then you start looking at some of the other teams. It won't be San Francisco. It might be the Cowboys, though. It might be them.
That's a desperate team, always. Jerry?
The Colts?
I was just going to say the Colts. They always find a way to... Chris Ballard always finds a way to make noise in the draft, not for the right reasons.
Yep.
You got the Steelers down there. I mean, the teams at the bottom are at the bottom for a reason. They have stability at quarterback. So...
I mean, even the Chargers, depending on who the Rams, I was thinking.
The Rams.
The Rams, considering who their quarterback is and how he's getting towards the end, if Sean McVay says, I can do something with Shador.
Yeah, but
I can do something with Jackson Dart.
Yep, but the difference is at 26, if he takes Jackson Dart, you go, damn, he's smart.
Yep.
But we're sitting here going, oh, Jackson Dart, turn on the film. If he's in the top 10, yes. If he goes 26 to the Rams, I'm like, damn, Jackson Dart's probably going to be good.
They did it again.
How do we not see four guaranteed teams right now in front of the Bears that are taking a quarterback?
Saints,
Titans, Giants, Raiders, Saints.
I think it's very possible that that happens, Shane.
And it could be five, depending on how Cleveland feels about Deshaun Watson.
They should not feel anyway about Deshaun Watson.
Could be five.
How about the Jets?
Could be six. I don't know if there are six quarterbacks in this draft, but it could be six.
I don't know if any of these guys outside of Cam Ward I would take over 25-year-old Justin Fields. I think if I'm the Jets, I'm like...
But you're talking about the future, though. That's a two-year deal.
Yes, but if I'm them, I'm like, I can wait. Yeah, I can wait on the next Manning.
We're the Jets. We'll be here again.
I can wait because there's another Manning that might become available in next year's draft. If not next year, then the year after. So you're covered. So they might be able to do all of
that.
But
what if your owner, who's a little... Yeah. He's a little nuts.
Yep.
What if your owner on draft day decides to flip the table over and say, I don't care, we need this guy in our room?
Well, then you're already... If you're Aaron, you're already off to a bad start with things. Already off to a bad start. Why don't we run all of this stuff by our guy, Jason Leisure? Let's talk with him about all of these things and the Kyler Gordon signing, because Kyler getting signed is significant. It's a big deal. So let's do that. Jason Leisure is going to join us to talk Bears next on The Score.
You know, it's a strong opinion to just get talent. I think the NFL is so difficult in part because we look at the Bears and we say, look, they filled five new starters. They completed the offensive and defensive line. And you look at it and you say, well, like, let's look at ages. Let's look at years. Dolman probably is like a long-term guy. Maybe you don't need to draft a center now because you did sign one. But you've got to get your depth to a point where if there's an injury or if somebody is going to retire in a year or two, you've got someone that is ready to step in and be like a really strong stalwart. I think that you can't draft enough defensive linemen ever. You can't draft enough pass rushers even if you spend a draft doing it.
No doubt.
That's just that position is so important. And I feel the same way about the offensive line, especially the with the left tackle position that the Bears are in right now. And everyone argues about this. Braxton Jones would be fine. He'd be ready to go. No, he won't. He's not going to be there for the start of camp, right? He doesn't get an off season. He's coming off an injury. You know, I think the frankness is appreciated from the head coach, Ben Johnson, who says, oh, yeah, we need to put more weight on him because we got to improve his anchor.
Yeah.
That's very true. The problem is he just had surgery. He's coming off that. How do you put weight on a guy who needs to keep his weight down so he can heal what his injury is?
And then get him on the practice field and recuperated and up to speed and then ready to play in a game in week one. And listen, like, this idea of, oh, they'll be fine. Like, isn't Chicago tired of being fine at premium positions? Like, at some point, if you are serious about actually winning football games in October and November and December, you need to be more than fine. And you need to be very ambitious with how you put your roster together. And so, yeah, sure, they shored up the interior of the offensive line. Make the left tackle position stronger. Go look in the draft and see if you can find a guy that can compete and maybe come in and give you some things there. The other thing that you bring up that I think is absolutely paramount to keep at the center of the conversation is the roster looks pretty good for 2025. When you start looking at 2027, is Grady Jarrett still starting in 2027? Is Joe Tooney still starting for the Bears in 2027? We don't know. And so, like, the responsibility of a general manager, and in this case, a general manager head coach union, has to be building the roster for now, but also being very cognizant of what's ahead and trying to make sure that you are finding answers both for the now and for the future. And so that's why I think next week is pretty significant, particularly as we've talked about a lot with those four picks in the top 75.
Yes.
Go get guys. Like, you know, we have the Kyler Gordon extension this week. It's the first player that Ryan Poles has gotten to a second contract.
Drafted and now paid.
Developed and, yes. And paid, right? And, like, you need to do more of that because the book closed on Ryan Pace when Tevin Jenkins went elsewhere, and it was eight players over seven drafts that they drafted and got to a second contract. One of those was Tariq Cohen, who never played on the second contract because he got hurt. And another one was Deion Bush, who was just signing a bunch of one-year deals to be a special teamer. You need to find guys in this draft, four picks, top 75, that are going to be here in 5 years. Like, that's the goal.
Yes. And I mean, the other thing is, when you look at different positions, you know, what is the greatest need for the Bears? It's probably left tackle. They need one. Are there any available? There are guys that are big, strong guys that might be able to switch from one side to the other. There are guys that that probably don't deserve to go at 10 that could play that position. So I'm not sure that you're going to get the left tackle in this draft. I think that Campbell will probably be gone by the time you pick.
Calvin Banks Jr. is probably the other option.
Yes. And I like that option, but he's a younger guy. He's a junior coming out. I just don't know whether or not that's a guy that you draft and start, or whether he needs more time as well. So it is difficult to look at their greatest need. Do they need a running back? I believe they do.
Yes.
If they get Ashton Jeanty, is that an upgrade? I need a 40 time for him. I know that's a crazy problem to have. I just can't get past it. I want to know. I think his numbers after contact are incredible.
Yeah.
He also played at a lower level. And, you know, when his team met Penn State, he wasn't getting a lot of yards after contact.
Yeah, right.
He got stymied, stuffed in that game. That bothers me. If he's as good as people believe, that's great. Take him. You'll be so much better. I think that the coach might want him. Who knows? The same thing with the tight end. You got a pretty good tight end here. I don't know why they don't use him more. He seems like he could be a weapon if you used him more. But he is not the kid in Detroit. He's not the kid that's making all these big plays and getting you the third downs. That you know, it's frustrating that hasn't worked out as well as it should. It's just weird that it doesn't. And I think this guy can do good things with him. But if they get the kid from Penn State,
right,
that's awesome. That kid is so good. And he can block a little bit and you know, better.
Versatile.
Very good player.
Total chess piece. And then,
I'd like to see a 40 on him. I think he's like in the four, sixes, sevens. I'm just saying.
He's not a guy that's going to separate naturally.
Never.
But he's going to do a lot of things with the ball in his hands and be one of those strong physical guys that can be dynamic for you. I think the Michigan tight end is every bit as good. It's a very different player, Colson Loveland.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a guy that you can use as a receiving threat.
Yes.
And you can make him into a a player that defenses have to pay attention to. What I liked hearing from Ben Johnson down at the owners' meetings a couple weeks ago, when it relates to the running back discussion, is not getting caught up with, oh, it's a running back, it's a running back, it's a running back. He views it as a weapon. You know, so, okay, are we going to try to add weapons to our offense? I don't care what position they play. If it's a weapon that's going to help us score points and be somebody that every single down a defense has to be aware of that then makes life easier on our quarterback, who's obviously, we all know, the linchpin of this entire thing, then we seriously consider it, right? Like, and so like, I have zero issue with the consideration of picking Ashton Gentry at 10, even going up to 8, if you feel like you have an urge and like this is the absolute must-have guy for what we're trying to do offensively,
with you.
Go for it.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I feel the same way about the tight end. I have a feeling of trust about the coach. I'm not going to get too worried about it, but I do look at that offensive line, and I do want it to get better.
Yeah.
And I do think they need competition with some of those veteran guys. And I don't
need
think,
depth.
I don't think Ryan Bates is the answer.
He certainly wasn't.
He's your
right?
depth
like,
piece.
And you traded for him, and you had great faith going into last season that you had the requisite depth to get you through a year, and then depth on the offensive line was one of the top three reasons that the season fell apart.
The kid got sacked
68
times.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you're going to fix the offense, you got to kind of start with that idea. Now, Keenan Allen is gone. You know, Keenan Allen didn't have a great year, but that guy is like so steady, third down machine type
crafty.
Of guy. And you know, the quarterback seemed to like him. I disagree with Dustin. I think they could use a receiver. I don't think you take a receiver there, but I think they could use another receiver.
If they took one in the first 2 days, I would not be upset about it. Like, 'cause I do think you need depth there as well.
How do you feel about taking offense 1 year and taking defense next year? Are we set up trying to convince ourselves that the new offensive coach needs to get guys to have his offense? Or do we say to ourselves, geez, you know, they got a chance to get a great defensive piece that could really help everybody on the defense and really change the way they play defense? And I wonder if that's something that they would even consider. I know they brought in a couple of pass rushers. I think if they came away, this is my problem with predicting the draft. I think they need a lot, and I think if they came away with a guy, whether it's and there aren't many inside guys available in the draft.
Right.
If they get an inside guy, that makes them 10 times better. If they get a pass rusher who can really, you know, be relentless at that craft, that makes them better. I'm all for it. I have no problem with what they do at 10 if they wind up going defense.
No. And so like Mason Graham for me is the dream scenario defensively. And
he'll
if
gone,
he
though,
falls
right?
and like that's another guy that if he's around at 8, like I'm getting on the phone and saying,
you're
hey,
up and getting-
yeah, can, do you want our 3? You know, like can we go up? You know, what's it going to take to get up 2 spots there? Bears obviously moved down a couple years ago in the trade with Philly that brought them Darnell Wright, and the Eagles got Jalen Carter. And so you know what the cost of that is, moving one slot right around that point of the draft board. But Graham is one of those guys that you plug into a defense. I get it. He's a little undersized, and you're trying to figure it out. But instinctually, the leverage that he plays with, the ability to be a constant difference maker in the interior of the defensive line, you run that pick in if it's there for you to make. These are the cool times inside a building, the last 2 weeks to 10 days before a draft, because now all these scenarios can be put in a conference room and you can argue them, right? Like, this position coach can fight for this guy,
yes,
and this coordinator can fight for this guy, and Ryan Poles and with Ben Johnson at his side have to look at, again, that menu and decide, okay, what is the choose-your-own-adventure we want here? And you mentioned a little earlier, you also have to be aware of the depth at each position, saying, you know,
huge. If you don't get to take a running back, you're going to get a really good one.
You still got an opportunity.
There's going to be a seriously good player when you are on the board again, because it's not that far away. But I think it's difficult for teams, generally speaking, to improve positions they think they're okay at.
Yeah,
it's not good enough to be okay. You got to get better, and you got to get better. You could surprise people by getting better. If this guy is there, you could get seriously better by drafting him, and that might mean that one of the guys that you like is now in a secondary role. And that includes Cole Kmet if that right. happens, because I think he's a good player. But if they got one of these like stud tight ends, that kid from Penn State is just a monster.
Well, and like with Cole, Cole's been here now 5 seasons. His urge to be successful in Chicago trumps his urge to be featured, right? Like, yes. like Cole Kmet yes. wants to see the Chicago Bears break through
I agree.
This longstanding mediocrity that they've been stuck in. And so, like, if he has to take on a slightly lesser role and block more and not get the football as much, but they win 10 games, like, he will be the happiest guy in the city. And he knows the spoils that'll come with that.
Can they win 10 games?
They can. Now, like Big Z and I talk about this a lot, like you go through their schedule. Like,
that
schedule's got some teeth to it.
Yeah. You know, this idea that Jalen Johnson is following guys. Do you see the guys he's going to be following?
You're right, right.
It's a hell of a difficult group of receivers that he's facing.
We're going to get to hear from Dennis Allen later this week, Thursday, at House Hall. And one of the questions that I have for him is, what's the philosophy on traveling? And how do you do that in a responsible way? You know, where you're not asking a guy for 17 games every single play to be exerting energy, right? And one of the reasons, like, people always got upset about this the last few years, like, when you're a zone-based team like Matt Eberflus like to run, you can't travel a guy, because all they have to do is slide, you know, Davante Adams in the slot, and now Jalen Johnson's got to play slot corner, you know, and that's not his preferred position. It's exactly a totally different game.
And that's a good point. I think, you know, we were talking about it a little bit yesterday. The problem with having a guy that's traveling is you're telling the offense exactly how you're lining up. You're giving them, okay, he's here. That means they're in man. That means you're not hiding anything. And I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of people that like to hide things. I still, you know, Dustin mentioned during the pick six about Jaquan Brisker. That's a really difficult decision there, because I like him a lot. I think he's a hell of a player. But he's right. One hit could change his that could be the end of his career. And that's awful. And you don't want to tell someone, hey, whatever you do, make sure you don't get a concussion, because he needs to be able. He needs to be the brick that he is when he comes up as a run stuff.
It's been every season,
every with one, him. Three
and,
years,
and each one of them has been a little bit
worse,
and like one of those ones where it's like he plays. You know, I remember in Atlanta a few years ago where he was evaluated twice and returned to the game twice, and then by Tuesday he's in the concussion protocol. Yeah. He's not playing again, and so when you have this history of that. I love Jaquan. He's a well-intentioned dude that like is passionate about succeeding and winning. But man, there's some life questions that you have to answer when you've been through this now for a handful of consecutive years. And the Bears obviously can't bank on him staying healthy for a full season and getting to a second contract with them. And so you've got to start to line yourself up with contingency plans.
I can't wait to really see what Ben Johnson wants to do with this offense, because I think a lot of it, you know, we sit here and we just generally say, well, he's going to get the quarterback better. He's going to get, and then he is saying, well, we're going to run play action.
That's it.
I think play action would help this guy quite a bit. I also think it's a difference, and there's a change, and he's no longer kind of the guy in the shotgun, and I'm not sure how he feels about that.
This is where this experimental process of the next 2 months is going to be so key for them, because I think Ben believes very strongly that an under center running game is the best thing for the football team. The first step is getting your quarterback comfortable with that. And if you can get that installed and you can get Caleb understanding that, okay, if I can just work through this and grind through this and become a little bit more polished coming out from under center, it should change the way we run offense. Now, does it fit him, right? And like, so this is a question you hear from some people that are just like a little bit head scratching with the whole thing, is like, does this turn out that like Caleb just doesn't fit that, and you've got to go back to a more shotgun based system, and now all of a sudden you have a mismatch of head coach preference and quarterback, and we're right back in the same awful cycle that the Bears are always in. But look, like I think there's an opportunity here to unlock some things really quickly, and I think Ben has vocalized and shown the urgency of what these next set of mini camp practices and OTAs, and then the last mini camp before you break. It means a lot towards getting yourself a vision for reporting to training camp, because if you go and vocalize that we're going to win and we're going to win now, you can't go into training camp being like, oh, we're going to figure some things out over these next 6 weeks. No, you've got to be in a mode to get yourself on the runway.
I agree with you. I think, you know, we're talking about offensive line, defensive line, right there, they're about four positions. But then you start talking about the secondary. I'm very intrigued by what Al Harris can do with Tyreek Stevenson, because I think there's a lot of talent there, but I think there's other issues, and there's kind of – they're going to have to fix whatever is broken or fractured within that his relationship, not just with the team and teammates, but – with football, with the game. How does he play it? How's he going about it? They're changing something with him. I hope they can do that, but I would also want to have some cover. I think you do with Terrell Smith, but
yeah,
it's difficult.
So this is a conversation I had last week with someone elsewhere in the league about whether the Bears consider corner at 10. You know, we haven't talked about it at all for the last 3 months. It's been a discussion that has not existed.
Kid from Michigan, the kid from Texas, right? Those are the two players, because you figure Colorado guy's long gone. Yeah.
And the kid from Michigan, like, traits there. Yeah. And then the question is, does he have the top-end speed? Is he, you know, is he going to fit the aggressive style that DA likes to play? That's a question there. With Tyreek Stevenson, like, he came in with volatility. You know, and it was like, okay, can you get his passion channeled in the right direction? Can you live with a couple of the boneheaded penalties where he gets a little bit excited after the whistle and costs you 15 yards? And now you've got the scarring from Washington last year, and you've got to figure out how Al Harris and Dennis Allen help him work through that, because he is, I mean, he's an eternal meme, right? Like, he's...
Oh, I know.
It's a viral... That's awful. He'll never live that down, and so now you've got to figure out a way to work around that.